Okay, we're now beginning the second tape with Elda Willits, and it's a day later. It is now May 1st, 1999, May Day.
Yeah.
And these two, the last hour we've just recorded and the amount that we're going to record tonight goes in addition to what we recorded with Elda, roughly 30 minutes worth back in November of 1990.
Right.
Elda, in the last hour yesterday, we talked about why you have a different birthday now than you did in 1990. We talked a great deal about your mother, all different aspects of her, and we talked about your father and his untimely death and what you remembered about that. I think that's what we ended with
yesterday. I think we did, yeah.
I guess what I would like to do today is start with talking about two different things. One is I want you to talk a little bit about the Italian community where you lived in San Francisco. We talked a little bit about that yesterday.
Right.
And then I would also like you to talk about how that was different from other communities and how it was similar to other ethnic communities in San Francisco.
Right, right.
But let's start with just talking about where the Italians lived in the city and what the neighborhoods looked like and the kinds of businesses the Italians had at that time.
Right.
Well, this would be the 1920s, roughly.
Right. Well, we lived in North Beach. It's in San Francisco, and it takes a section like from the waterfront up Columbus Avenue and over to Broadway. And Broadway was the dividing line. North of Broadway was Chinatown. And when I was living there, the two never interfered with each other. Broadway seemed to be the dividing line, and hardly anybody came other than to do a little shopping. Now it has changed, where if you went in North Beach now, it's mostly all Oriental, with the exception of a few Italian places here and there. And the neighborhoods look the same. The houses are all the same, but it has changed tremendously in that aspect. But when we were there, it was all strictly Italian, different dialects. There was a lot of Sicilians, Southern Italy, and we all blended beautifully. I mean, I don't know if I mentioned yesterday when we were talking, but that's where Joe DiMaggio lived, and I knew his sisters, and we lived close by, and it was a great place to grow up, because you felt at home there. You had no embarrassments. I mean, you felt like you were part of an ethnic community that cared, and we all really helped each other all the time.
What were some typical businesses that were established by Italians at that time?
Well, right in North Beach there, most of them was, and some of the, one of them is there yet, was a delicatessen called Panelli. And they imported a lot of things from Italy, but they also made their own, and they had the best of everything, like the Parmesan cheese. They would import big wheels of it and sell it stuff, and the Italian olive oil and everything, and it was just like home then. And it's still there to this day, though. I mean, and it was there way back then. And another one was Molinari. So most of them were really either in the fruit and produce and grocery business and delis and things like that. In order to bring the old world here, that's what they did.
Were there any service industries that were run by Italians?
Service. Well, I mean, yeah, we were mostly, they called them scavengers then. I mean, they would collect the garbage, but not, they got an, I forget what they're called now, some kind of a real fancy name, and I forget. But they were there, they had that service, and I don't think there was other, no.
Do you have any specific recollections of the garbage collection at that time?
Oh, definitely, because you had to put the garbage can out where they could get it. I mean, so they would come even to your backyard, but it'd have to be accessible. And it wasn't like now that it's mechanized. They had a leather jacket or something, and they would take each garbage can and put it on their back and go to the truck and dump the garbage in the truck. I mean, and that And they would do that early in the morning. That was really quite a procedure they had to go to. But that was one thing that paid a lot of money. I mean, because not very many wanted to do that. But if you were in it, it was really a high-paying job. But who wanted it?
Was that a service that your family paid for? Or was that provided for by the city?
No, we paid for it. I mean, every family paid. And you paid so much a barrel. So my mother made sure that we'd stuff that barrel real solid because she wasn't about to have more than one pickup, you know.
Were there certain types of things that you, as a child, thought should be thrown out that your mother or father insisted on not throwing out to reuse in some way?
Oh, I mean, my mother, I mean, I don't think she ever threw out anything in the way of food. I mean, she would... Because any leftovers, we would make what are called polpette. I mean, which would be, well, it's a mixture. Like, if she'd made a lot of soup with boiled beef in it. We used to call it bolito because, and vegetables. It's like corned beef and cabbage, but Italian style. Well, if there was any beef left, then she'd chop that, put it with egg and cheese and a bread and make a croquettes out of it, like croquettes, but only ours were called. So she never, and if she had any vegetable left, she would make what is called frittata because you chop it up and put it with egg and put it. So I don't think, other than what she had to do, like the ends of asparagus that you can't eat, but if it was edible, she never threw one thing away, Paul.
What about glass or metal or something like that?
Glass, for the garbage, you mean?
Yeah. Were these things that you threw out, or were they reused in some way?
The bottles at that time, Paul, they used to return them to the store because you got paid for it. So we never threw any of that away because you got, I think it was a nickel a bottle or something. I don't know if it was that much at that time, but later on it got to be a nickel a bottle. And we had bottles in returnable and refund until all the cans came with all that. And before that, it was just a bottle. And we never threw any of that out either. So I don't know what garbage we really had, but...
Service industries, you mentioned the garbage collection. Were there any other service industries? For instance, was there a hotel that was run by Italians or boarding houses or some kind of a...
Seeing if there were, I don't know. I mean, as far as boarding, you know what? They, like my mother had boarders also to supplement the income. And I guess there were, I don't know of any individual like a bed and breakfast or anything they had here, but people would take boarders in their family because if my mother cooked for 10, she could cook for 11 or 12.
Do you have personal recollections of the boarders?
Well, I do. And then after, friends of my brother's from the club, they came and, because he was the only one in the only boy, and he had the room, and somebody slept with him in his room. So they'd even slept there and had room and board and everything and took it in for money.
Was there a boarder that was in your house that you were particularly fond of as a growing up?
No, because, see, it was my brother's friends, and they were much older. And I was really not in their age bracket, but it was, they always had really good friends, so they fit in the family great, and it was really great being with them. We enjoyed it, though. Everybody enjoyed it. It was more of a friendly thing than, it became so, they were part of the family almost.
Do you know what your mother charged?
No, I wish I did. I really don't know, but whatever it is, because of the friendship, it would have been a real nominal amount, I'm sure, you know? I have no idea, though, Paul.
When you were growing up, was there a favorite store that you had that you particularly enjoyed going to?
Well, we used to love to go downtown to Woolworth's, the dime 5 and 10 cent store, and also the Emporium, because that had a basement. They were two places where we could really afford. And it was going downtown, and it was being with the other high fancy people. And though we didn't share it, I mean, we'd go in the basement, but it was fun going there. And my mother and I, sometimes for diversion, would do that. and she'd go to the, give me a treat or something at the dime store and pick up something. So we enjoyed that. In the neighborhood, though, it was the only place I went with her was really to do the grocery shopping and everything, and that's all there was.
Did she have a particular store that she enjoyed doing her shopping?
Definitely, and she used to walk a lot of distance to do that because we lived, she'd walk about 8 or 10 blocks to get there, and it was a butcher shop on Broadway Street, which is about, was about a good 8 blocks from our place. But the, she used to go there because to make this boiled beef, she would ask the butcher if she could give him a bone to put with it, and the butcher, and she'd always say, "I wouldn't mind if there was a little meat left on the bone," and he'd give her a bone with a lot of meat. So. And she would go out of her, oh, it became so they were the best of friends, and she'd go there because every time you saw it, says, "Okay, I'll get you the bone with a lot of meat on it." And it, she didn't have to buy much meat to make us a meal.
Because she had to walk so far, what did she carry her groceries in?
I mean, she just had a bag and carried. My mother was really a real healthy, strong woman. She was used to working in the fields, bringing up the children, and she had the strength. She would walk, come back, do the work. That didn't bother. She'd carry all the groceries, and it just didn't seem to bother her. I can't do it, Paul.
It's a long way to carry a big beef bone.
And all the other stuff.
And all the other stuff.
You know, yeah, really, and it's hard to carry groceries.
I wanted to ask you, because you were talking about Broadway being the dividing line between the Italian neighborhood and Chinatown.
Right.
Can you tell me of an occasion where you had, either as a girl or as a young adult, to go into Chinatown?
Yeah, we did. I mean, and somehow my mother put the fear of God in me about the Chinese. Why? I mean, I think they were such strange-looking people to her, probably. She'd never seen them. And it, through her, it was to me, too. So we would go, and at that time, the Chinese would even have metal on their feet. So they had no feet, really. They only had, like, stumps. And they would walk the same way, and she would say, "Oh, I wonder what that happened. I think we ought to be careful." I mean, she didn't know what it was. Then they had trap doors in Chinatown, whereby they delivered freight through the trap doors. Well, I didn't know that, and my mother didn't know that. She would hold me by the hand, Paul, and she'd say, "Don't get near that, because if you fall in there, I'll never see you again." I mean, you know. Well, I got to thinking that, oh my gosh, I mean, and you know, Paul, it's taken a long time for me to really get over that habit. And she would say, they really weren't the cleanest. You know, when you get downtown where the brocade and the silk of Chinatown is beautiful, we were at this other end of the Chinatown where they have the markets and everything, you know, and they'd have ducks hanging in the window by their neck and everything. And oh, I mean, and my mother would say, "Oh, it's so dirty." Well, it took me a long time to get over it. And now I figure, oh my God, they're just like we are. But she had really done, and she died thinking of that, thinking.
Do you remember the first time you went to a Chinese restaurant for dinner?
Well, do you know, Paul, I don't really actually completely enjoy one yet. I do go. I mean, and I have gone, and I know it's great. But I, like, if I had to choose, I would never, never choose a Chinese restaurant. And I've gone there, and it's wonderful, but I don't enjoy it yet.
The effects that our parents have on us.
You see, isn't it? I mean, can you relate to that?
Well, I can see. Well, I mean, it also helps to put your mother into a certain context, you know, a certain type of person who was living at a certain time and place.
Right, and she wasn't about to change.
That's right.
Her world was small, Paul. So how could she ever change much? She never went out, you know, and her ideas, and at the time there was no one seemed to be able to tell her she was wrong, because everybody felt almost, I was in the family, that they all felt about the same way. And it was hard.
When you were getting older, like when you were, by the time you were in high school, say,
yeah,
were there certain ways that, well, your father would be dead by then when
you were in high school.
Were there ways that your mother and actually your older sisters and brothers looked different to you than the parents of perhaps the kids that you went to school with?
Oh, definitely.
How? What, in what ways did they look different?
Well, I mean, it seemed like we acted different, too, than the others, and where we were so restrained by my mother that we never really opened up to anything. My sisters had worked all the time. That's all they really knew. And I got into the outside world where things seemed to be opened up and so different. And I'd see that outside and I'd go home and there was no reasoning there. I mean, there was no logic there. It was just, they were so focused on working and doing that they couldn't understand anything else, Paul. And I really, really suffered through it because they couldn't understand it. They couldn't understand why I even wanted to act differently. And I would tell them they should have, really, I got so, God, you should have learned the language. It's embarrassing to go out and tell people you don't know. And Paul, they were the most loving people that now I feel like I have a guilt complex thinking I could have even felt that way about such beautiful people and then feeling like I was ashamed of them at the time.
What were some of the things that you were beginning to experience that were different from what you knew?
Well, I mean, I think the first one was even the dress, the way we dressed, the way they lived each day. I mean, they never were interested in entertaining or going out or having a good time. I mean, even when they got married and they had children, they brought them up and they lived just like my mother did. And I got in a world where you'd think of going out, you'd think of dressing up, you'd think of having friends, of going to dancing, and it was hard because they couldn't really understand why I wanted to do it.
Well, because your sisters are so much older than you, that they're almost of that generation.
Well, they blended well with my mother. I mean, there was really, as I say, it was a house divided four and four. And it seemed like my four older sisters lived just like my mother and enjoyed every bit of it. And it was hard for, and they got married and didn't know, they married immigrants. So, I mean,
all four married immigrants. From the same area in Italy?
More or less. Northern Italians? Yeah. You know, and so their world never changed. Ours did. And so you saw such a difference, like even getting dressed to go out. I mean, they didn't get dressed much while they were home all the time. Well, getting dressed to go out, getting excited about doing something which I yearned for, and I didn't have it at first.
Describe for me specifically how your mother dressed and looked and how that was different than what you were seeing.
All right, she usually had, like, she always had an apron on because she was always cooking. And as if I remember, most of the time she didn't have dresses. She would have skirts with a blouse, but a long skirt and a blouse and an apron. And her hair was always just back with and with hairpins they put it in. And my sisters were all the same way. And they never even thought of getting haircuts or anything. They maintained that, I mean, that even when any style that came, they weren't interested. It was years and years after before they even thought of getting their haircut. I mean, so they never got to any trend that came along, didn't mean a thing
to
them.
This is the 1920s, the hemlines are going up and the hair is being bobbed.
Right, right.
Tell me an occasion, and maybe you'd be in high school by now, or junior high school, where you needed a fancy dress for something.
Yeah, well, you know, that...
And did your mother participate in that process?
You know, I mean, I didn't finish... I only went to 2 years of high school, Paul, because I could not get any clothes or any new things, not what I like to have. And my brother really wanted me to continue school and go to college. I wasn't stupid, but I just couldn't see that at all, Paul, because I needed to have a little independence, and so I felt like money would give it to me. And so after 2 years of high school, my friend and I, who started school together, also quit school together. We went to business college and went to work, and what a great feeling it was to give my mother money, but we were always then able to keep money to buy clothes, to go to the show, and do things like that. It was a different world.
How did your mother feel about the idea of you going to business college?
Well, she loved it.
Why?
Because she knew it would bring a little money into her for the household, and she knew that it would be good for me and my independence. Because I think my mother would realize then I was different. I would like that, but she couldn't afford to do it really at all. So she was really all for it, and she didn't have the money, but my brother paid for my tuition. I think I went to business college for about 6 months and whatever.
What did you learn at business college?
Stenography and typing and shorthand, they called it. And I was hired first as a stenographer, they called it, where you take shorthand and write it and then transcribe it. And then I got into private secretary too. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it, and I really became kind of successful in it, you know.
Do you think that the pleasure that you were getting from this independence changed the way you interacted with your mother in any way?
Fortunately though, all of this, I think my mother kind of she enjoyed what I was doing. And maybe it might have been something that she wished she could have done, because, Paul, I didn't have that hard a time having my mother rejoice with me instead of preventing me from doing it. She rejoiced with me in doing it, really, and going out. Like, I lived in the big band era. This was after high school, And Paul, it was a beautiful time to live with the big bands. We'd be playing at the Fairmont and the hotels, and you had to go in a formal, and a man with a dark suit and a tie or a tux or anything. And it was great. Well, she loved to see me get dressed up and have a date and go, because she could tell how happy I was. So she rejoiced in it, really, Paul, and it was really great. And I did contribute to the house, too. So it was I killed two birds with one stone.
Well, of course, but in a way it makes sense that she wouldn't resist, because she comes from a tradition where the women did work. I mean, your sisters all were working in Italy, getting a job.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she didn't mind that at all, you know. I mean, she didn't mind my quitting school and go to work. My brother did. I mean, he would have enjoyed having me go, but
why? What was his resistance?
I was a pretty good scholar. Not at high school, I gave it up, but I was an A student, and I could have continued. I lost desire. And he wished I hadn't, and he kept saying, "Why don't you? You're able to, Elder." I just couldn't see it, Paul. And so I went, and it paid me well through the years what I did. So I've always felt there's been a God's guidance, whether I didn't know what I was doing, but it seemed to be the right thing, because it blended with everything I had to do in life later on. So it was really a good thing, I think, that I did.
When your father died, did your brother, which brother is this?
Joe.
Did his position in the family change in any way when your father died?
Well, see, a man is considered a man of the house there. Joe was a great, great guy. I mean, he was a wonderful guy, but he could never take the role of my father. I mean, somehow he lacked. I mean,
Did he try?
No, I don't even think he wanted to try, because I don't know. I think he was my mother's boy, and he stayed that way. You know, he was not, how would you call it, of great substance, but he was the most wonderful guy in the world. I mean, he tried to make everybody happy. You know, you can't do that. And I think his mission in life was to make, he got married, and my mother lived with him, and he spent his whole life, Paul, trying to please two women and trying to keep my mother happy and his wife happy. That's hard, you know? And that's what I say. I mean, I don't know, but he's about as good as they come, Paul.
Is there a story that you can tell me up for the tape about something he did for you, either when you were growing up or later?
Well, I mean, somehow he was always there for me with something special. He wasn't very demonstrative, I mean, with a lot of hugs and kisses, and he couldn't do it. But like when I graduated high school, grammar school, he gave me a beautiful gold filigree fountain pen that it must have cost a fortune at the time. I wished I had. It was so beautiful, Paul. It was the kind, though, that you had to put ink in it, you know? I wished I could have kept it, because it was really my pride and joy for so long, and I thanked him forever. Then when he belonged to a club, and an athletic club, and he'd always have friends over through him. I always had boyfriends I could go with and everything. So he played a big role in my life.
What job did he have?
He started out working in the men's store. Then he put up his own grocery store when my dad helped him. And when that failed, I think, then he went back to a men's store. And then he put up his own, and then after the Depression, he went to work in another grocery store and then put up his own store in over by Twin Peaks. And it was a big success then. It was really, and he really did well. And then the city bought the store to make a parking lot out of it and paid him cash. He did well, really, and he deserved it, because he was a great, great guy.
Let's see, Ida is the next one after you.
Right.
And then is Joe after Ida?
Yeah. And then Rico.
So in a way, they're closer in age to you than they are to the other end.
Exactly.
Can you talk a little bit about, and was Rico of that same age category, or was he sort of more on the old end?
No, he was more in our age category.
Can you talk about Rico and Ida and Joe and their, if they were feeling or went through some of the same experiences you did by the sort of conflict with the old world and the new world?
Right. Well, I think Ethan and I felt it more than anybody. I mean, and I think Joe and, well, my brother Rico was a sad case. I mean, Paul, he came with my dad, and my dad left them alone, and I'm sure he felt abandoned. And by the time we came back, he was not about to listen to, we all listened to my mother. He was not about to listen to my mother after being abandoned at 14 and coming here when he was 18 or 19. So he was really quite a problem all the time, and it's really sad he ended up in a state hospital, and there was not much we could do for him. And my brother seemed to blend a little bit with my sisters, though he was more with Ida and I, but it was Ida and I that we too really rebelled. I mean, at one time, Paul, I was ready to leave the house. I mean, I hated everybody and everything.
Why? What happened that drove you to that point?
Well, because I think, after I went to work. And then I felt like I should do whatever I felt like doing, and I couldn't. And I mean, because I felt like I'm earning money, I can do what I want. And I really thought I was ready to just leave. And it was through this friend, Etta, and her mother that said, you know, your mother will always love you, you know, and they really decided for me I shouldn't, because I think I would have left home, Paul.
What was it if you had done what you wanted to do, where would you have gone and what would you have
done? Well, because my, oh yeah, I know why. My first job, there was a, the manager there, I don't know, see, and as I look back now, I figure it was Flattery, I'm sure, and I believed it, because he was going to go back to St. Paul, and he had told me there was a good job out there that he would have. And as I look at it now, I don't think it was as sincere as he sounded, but I believed him then. And I would have been ready. I don't know what I think it would have been a mess. So again, I think I was guided because I didn't know any better either, you know?
But that was the motivation.
Exactly.
You wanted to go to St. Paul.
Well, I wanted to go anywhere, and I figured this was a great, if I had a chance, I could have, and so I'm glad, I'm really glad I didn't. Oh my God, am I ever glad I didn't.
Your life might have been a lot different.
Oh my God, I mean, it would have been a mess, I'm sure. You know, really, Paul, as I look back, it would have been.
So, when you were in business school for that 6 months, were there any other students that you remember who were in similar circumstances to you?
Well, no. I mean, none of the others, you know, the others couldn't have been, because I remember even being amazed talking to one particular woman who was there, and having been brought up like I was, we were talking one day, and she said, "You know what? My mother owes me all this. She brought me into this world, and I'm entitled to everything I can get." And I figured, oh my God. And I figured, oh my God, I couldn't even imagine. I thought that was sacrilegious almost, having talked to that. The only one I went with, Etta, and of course, Etta, we were the best of friends, thinking the same way, and the mother, you know, and everything. And that's the only thing, though, Paul. See, you hear all those things, and I figured, I'm in another world here. I can't even imagine anything like that.
Did Etta go to business school with you, too?
Yes.
I see. And I should say, for the sake of the tape, is Etta spelled E-T-T-A?
Right.
Which is not to be confused with your sister, Ida. Actually, Ida. I've said Etta, but it's Ida, and it's E-D-A.
Right. Well, you'll meet Etta tomorrow.
Yes, I know, at your party. I'm looking forward to
that. Yeah.
So that's interesting. That's a clash in itself.
I know.
Hearing these words come from one of your peers.
Well, you know, here we were supporting my mother. And, you know, and she comes out, but it's true, though, you know, and I figure a lot of people were living like that, but I couldn't imagine it, Paul.
When you finally started to work, you were still living at home.
Oh, yeah.
Right? What were some of the things that you were finally doing that you had always wanted to do?
All right. See, I started having dates. Then I met a boy when I started whom I really fell in love with, Paul. Well, that changed my whole world, really. And he's the one that used to take me to he loved to party. And he lived with his brother who lived in Oakland, and they gave parties all the time. Well, it so happened my mother liked him, and I was even able to stay overnight at his house because she knew him and she knew the family and all. And at that time, you know, it was different than now, Paul. Now, if you go out, you wonder, you know, you're going to go to bed when you come home. Well, that time you used to kiss goodnight, and that was about it, really. So there wasn't that. And the men knew it too, though, Paul. So there wasn't that much to worry about. So I really had a freedom then, and I had gotten all over that wanting to go out. And I mean, later, I was already beginning to have a guilt complex about the way I felt and what I would have done. And I had complete freedom then to go to dances, to go to parties, to go to football games, to go wherever I wanted to. It was the best feeling in the world, Paul, and my mother loved it too. And she was changing. My other sisters were all out of the house. She was kind of changing to Joe's life and my life, where he belonged to the club, he had friends over, and it was a different lifestyle for her.
I suppose she had to, in a way. I mean, it was a kind of sink or swim situation, because it was now out of her control, in a way.
Yeah.
Did your mother ever give you, when you started to date, two questions, actually. When you started to date, what was your mother's first reaction when you showed interest in boys? Well, that'll be the first question.
Well, the first thing is I always had to, no matter where I went, where are you going? I had to know, tell her where I was going, how long I was going to be, when I was going to be home, and how I was getting there. It was streetcar. Even people didn't have even car. I went on dates to a movie with a streetcar and came back, you know. And I mean, she had to make sure she liked the guy and saw him. And if she didn't, I couldn't go, really, you know. But I didn't have any problem.
Did she ever give you any advice about dating?
No, because you know what? At that time, Paul, I think it was just understood by everybody you weren't going to have any problem. It isn't like now, Paul, where, you know, you have to say, well, I think it was understood. You were going to go out to a movie, to a theater, come home, kiss goodnight, and come home. There wasn't a, you know, she never did. Cause,
or catch hell if you did.
I mean, she knew it. We knew the rules. I mean, it was really, it was celibacy all the time. I mean, it was understood. So there was not much advice to give.
I was just wondering, knowing your mother's background, knowing right. what she went through with your father when she first married him.
Right.
And then, of course, the second part of her life, having all those children.
Right.
I was just wondering if she had any specific opinions.
No, I mean, I never got, you know, I mean, as I say, I mean, it was an era where you didn't have to worry. And maybe she knew that. And she knew the family. She knew the boys. I mean, it made a difference.
Were your first few boyfriends, and I assume that this is probably were you in high school or in business school at this time or later?
It was later when I was working already.
Working already.
Right.
Did you only date Italians?
No. I mean, you know, Paul, and they were great. I mean, I had Italian friends through my brother, you know, and at the club and everything. And I'd go with them, and you know, there was always an inner feeling, I didn't want to end up with an Italian. I can't explain it inside, and I thought they were great kids, but I just knew. And then my first real love was not an Italian, and I knew then I would not marry one. But that ended up in a disaster anyway, you know. But then came Bill, and somehow he was perfect because he had left his family in Michigan. He was ready for a family. And my mother really loved the boy, loved Bill, and it blended so great that he became one of the family, and I needed him. It's somebody that made me, I feel that he made me what I am today, Paul.
How old were you when you met him?
I was real grown up in years. I mean, I didn't get married till I met him when I was about 30, and we got married when I was 32.
What was his full name?
William Gray Willits.
Gray, spelled how?
G-R-A-Y. It was the mother's maiden name.
William Gray Willits.
William Gray Willits.
And tell me how you met him.
I was working for a company called the Airway Company. They made vacuum cleaners then. And he had just come out from Michigan. No, he had gone to Florida. He was tired of the snow, had gone to Florida, came to California, ended up in the East Bay working as a salesman selling vacuum cleaners. And the company used to have a business meeting every Monday night where I had to stay there. And the salesman would come in and bring in their orders, and I'd have to take them in and give them reports, whatever they wanted to. And I'd have to stay there for the first hour or two of the meeting in case there were any, you know, they needed any more information. And this manager came and he said, Elder, I got a brand new salesman that I really think you'd enjoy meeting. Well, I had just broken up with the other, and I said,
well, the love of your life.
Yeah, and I figured, I said, I'm not, you know, whatever. And he says, I'm gonna bring him over some Monday, and you can meet him. So he did come over on Monday, and I figured, God, he's really good looking, you know? And so I told my mother, and he says, have him for dinner. And so we did, and that's how it started. And After we had him for dinner, the Saturday, at that time we used to work a half a day on Saturdays. The working day was 5.5 days. And so he used to live in Martinez, but this Saturday the phone rang and he said, "Elda," it was Bill, he said, "You know, I had some business to attend to over here and I figured I'd take a chance and maybe we could have lunch together." And then he said, after he said, it wasn't a business deal at all, I came over, and that's how it started. And
had you actually, before he came over for dinner, that first time, had you been with him alone at all?
No, not at all. We met him, as I say, I did meet him, I had seen him, and figured, at the meeting, and I figured, God, he really was a handsome man. And I figured, oh my gosh, I mean, I thought I'd like, and he was a gentleman, he was great.
Tell me all the specifics of that first evening with your mother at dinner with your husband-to-be.
Well, not only had he come, but the manager that introduced us, he came too, and my mother had a great dinner. And
do you remember what she cooked?
I'm sure she had made raviolis. You know,
is that sort of her special?
Yeah, I mean, if a special dinner, you always had something special like that and meat. And gosh, I guess Bill had been away from home enough that he just thought it was a little bit of heaven being in a family. My brother was there, and we're there, and he enjoyed. My mother was really an outgoing person, and if you enjoy company, it shows whether you speak the language or not. I mean, it comes from the heart, you know? And they really formed a relationship all the time after he left. And I said, "Mom, what is it?" And she says, "Oh, he seems like such a nice, you know, a great guy." Because you could tell that he liked my mother instantly.
Because she didn't really speak English that well.
No, she didn't.
How did she attempt to communicate with him when he was there first night?
Well, I think I did most of the talking. And I would be the interpreter, you know? But through actions, and they knew that they were welcome. They knew she loved cooking for them. So it was obvious that it was a happy place. And so I would interpret for them. But you know, Paul, then we lived with my mother. When we got married, we still didn't have any money. So we lived with her. And, you know, they got so they could understand each other. I mean, because then Bill got a job in at welding. It was after war was declared. See, we were married in February, and then war was declared.
February of?
Of 41.
41.
Right.
Right, and then war was declared in December.
Right. And so right after that, he became a welder. And he'd have a night shift. He'd go to work at 4 to 11, see, and I wouldn't be home. I mean, so it was, and I'd get home, and my mother said, "Bill said," and she would tell me that, you know, and I said, "Gee, how do you know? Are you sure, Mom?" And sure enough, they had a way of communicating all their own, I guess, with fingers and hands and 5 o'clock or something, you know, and they really got it to communicating.
Did Bill attempt to learn Italian?
Only words, because he was always a busy guy, you know, and he loved Italian cooking, he loved it, but not on a steady diet. That's why I never really got into, I still don't make raviolis. I have never made a ravioli.
It's a lot of work.
Well, it is. And then he loved it, but it wasn't in his, like when we first got married, the first thing he asked me to cook was scalloped potatoes. I didn't even know what they were. I mean, leave alone. And see, it was, and he loved peas with milk and stuff like that. So I came, I've always been a combination of both.
Well, this is like learning yet another culture in a way.
He got me a cookbook because I didn't know. And he got me a cookbook and everything, and so I did. I mean,
Is there an occasion that you can describe for me where you tried to make one of these things and what happened?
Trying to make scalloped potatoes was a riot. I mean, because I had no idea until he got me, but he tried to explain to me how to do it. And, well, it wasn't so bad, but until I got to his, I got the hang of things when we visited Michigan, and we'd stay there a week or so, and the mother then would show me his favorite dishes and how she cooked them and everything, and that was really different. He loved scalloped potatoes, and he loved rhubarb pie with strawberries in it. He loved donut holes. I mean, the mother gave. So then I even started making them donut holes when I got home. You know, I was brought up where I never changed, though, where I thought the man was always head of the house. And after, I spoiled my husband because he wasn't used to that. And I spoiled him. When we first got married and I'd say, oh, don't, Bill, I'll do it. I figured I should have never done that. I made a mistake from the beginning.
But that's the culture that you came from.
I couldn't help it. Yeah. I mean, so, but he loved it.
Your mother was born and bred to function that way.
Right. And you don't really basically completely ever change, Paul. Would you believe it? I still have a lot of that. I still have it in me.
Tell me about your mother at your wedding.
Oh, we didn't have a wedding.
All right. Well, tell me about that then.
Well, I mean, we had no money. But we would have, I mean, I'd never saved any. I just always used it for myself and the family. And he had come over here penniless himself. And so we lived on Powell Street, and right across the street was Emilio's, which is a wonderful restaurant now. It used to be a speakeasy. And they'd have, my mother would stay at the window because they'd have limousines coming in and taxis coming in, people in a formal dresses and tuxes, really high class it was. Well, Bill used to come and park in front of my house right across the street. And he woke up one morning and went down, and his car was bashed in. But they had left a business card on the windshield, and it was somebody from Standard Oil, and I figured, wasn't that wonderful? And left a little note that he had done the damage and to call him at work, maybe, and he would make sure that. So we got married on that, because Bill got a bid, and he got several bids, and he gave him the highest, and he went to the lowest to have it done, and we got married. We went to Las Vegas with the difference, and got married in Las Vegas, and then came home and lived with my mother again because we still didn't have enough money. And then he went into the service, but when he came home, we got a place of our own.
Was there some way that your mother commemorated your marriage to Bill when you came back, or something that she did?
She, we just had a nice family dinner, but that's all, because none of us ever had a big wedding of any sort. It was just a family dinner. I mean, people, just the family coming in, a few, and Bill had no friends here at all. So it was just me and the family. We had nothing.
What was his ethnic makeup? What was his background, nationality background?
Oh, he's Irish, English, and Scotch. And he was a college graduate.
How far back in terms of the immigration into this
country? Way back. I mean, 2-3 generations back. Way back, his goes, on both sides.
So, were any of your older sisters disdainful of the fact that you didn't marry an Italian?
No, I think they all had an idea I wouldn't. They could tell in the way I felt and everything. No, none of them did. They all accepted Bill. They all loved him. It was really a nice, it was a great thing.
When you were an adult and working, do you want to get a glass of water? Do you want a glass of water?
Yeah,
all right, here, let me just stop this a second. Being with Alda. We just talked about your sisters and how they felt about you marrying someone.
Right. They all accepted him really well.
In your adult life, did you experience yourself any kind of prejudice because you were Italian? Either getting a job or...
Well, as I was working, I did, because I naturally, I would tell everybody, Well, and they'd come out and say, God, you know what? If people don't speak the English language, they don't belong in this country. I mean, I can't imagine somebody living here and not knowing it. And Paul, that hurt, because I figure they were pretty good people. And so I did. I did experience a lot of that, really.
Do you think you ever didn't get a job because you were
Italian? No, I don't think that did, because that hadn't, it's only while you're working, you hear all these things, you know, and then you mentioned the house, and I always told them the truth, and what, I came here, and my brother, you know, and my mother doesn't, and a lot of them had come to the house and really loved my mother. Others would not come because of that. So it does hurt a little bit. So you never forget it, really, Paul. You know that.
Was your mother conscious of that?
You know, I don't think she really, and I'm glad she wasn't. I don't think she really, really was. Because, as I say, their world is so small, she never heard any of that. She always stayed within the Italian ethnic group, and she never really wandered very far. And so I don't think she did. I mean, and it's great. And I don't think my sisters did either. As I say, because their life was so complete with what they did, they didn't get, and they were at home where they were. Ethan and I got out in the world. I mean, they seemed to live in North Beach, period. Well, once you get out, I mean, you notice it. And I think that's what bothered Ida and me.
Did Ida have an experience in her life that you know of where she experienced some kind of prejudice because of her Italian background?
And I don't know that, but I do know that she must have really been self-conscious of it, because I've met friends of hers, and like she ended up by working for Gump's, which is one of the
elite... Gump's is a department store, isn't
right,
it?
Right, one of the elite shops. Right. You know, she ended up working there. And I guess certainly, you see, you don't want people there. I guess she felt like she was in such high class that she couldn't, because I would meet her friends and they'd say, and then talk, and she says, oh, do you have sisters? Ethan never mentioned that. So you know how she must have felt. It's after Ida died that I knew this, that I got with her friends, and then I would mention the family, and she'd say, oh, how many do you have? Because Ida never mentioned that. We only thought she had you. So you see how it must have bothered her.
Sure, sure, yeah. And being conscious again of that, even though they're sort of the same generation, but they're of a different mindset.
Exactly, and really Gump's was so elite that, you know, I can see where she felt that way too. So it bothered her and me, and yet we had such a beautiful, loving family that it couldn't have been better. So you're really kind of torn all the time, because you know the love there is, the values they have, how beautiful they are, how dedicated they are, how much they sacrifice, and yet you go out in the world and you don't want people to know, and that is all. It's almost a sin, isn't it, Paul?
But think how much conflict is inside the person who feels that.
Right, exactly. You know, exactly.
We have about 5 or 6 minutes left.
Okay.
And one thing we haven't talked about at all is the birth of your son.
All right.
And so I think that maybe we should end this second hour with you telling me about the birth of your son, Paul.
Okay, well, I mean, he's one of the, what do they call that, the, what generation is he now?
When was he born?
The what?
What year was he born?
46.
41, so he'd be the beginning of the baby boomer.
Boomer, that's it, he's the beginning. And so my husband was in the service, he came home in December of 45. And Bill was born 9 months and 3 days after Bill came home from the service. And
tell me about the pregnancy a little bit.
Oh, well, I mean, it must have been immediate.
And, but I mean, oh,
yeah.
Experience.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had morning sickness. Oh, I'd always just worked in an engine. And all of a sudden, here I am with morning sickness like you'd never believe. And for 3 months, I didn't even have the energy to even, I was working it too, to even comb my hair. And I got over it like the snap of a finger, like nothing happened. And after that, it was really no problem at all.
When did the morning sickness come in terms of the pregnancy, at the beginning or the
middle? I mean, it came about a month after, and it lasted for a couple of months at least, you know, and people go through that. And I used to hear about it, but I figured, oh, if you go through it, it's really something. And then he was born. I wanted a little boy because I wanted Bill to have a junior. And it turned out that way. He wanted a little girl. He'd say, a little girl to look just like you. So I'm glad we had a boy. And
what was the name going to be if it were a girl?
Linda. Yeah, we had the girl, the name pimped out. It would have been Linda Willits, and then a boy was. But during the war, I had a nephew that was killed in the service. And I had three nephews and Bill in. There was four in and three came back. And one of them was killed, and his name was Guido, an Italian name. So when when we came to name him, I asked him if he would mind if we used, instead of the gray, we just use a G, and we named him William Guido Willits. Well, that was, I thought that was real wonderful of my husband, because it's a name they'd never even heard of in Michigan, where he comes from. But he didn't, I mean, I could bring him up Catholic, I could name him anything. He was great. In business, he was the boss, but anything else, he'd really go along with me. And Bill was my pride and joy, because he was a real good-looking boy, and he was a good, real good baby.
What was the delivery like?
Delivery, oh my God, Paul, it was, I mean, like, it's so different than now. There was so many births during that baby boomer thing that it was, you know, I went into a commune to deliver the baby, and they were at all stages of the game. And you know, you'd hear him, and I walked in, I figured, oh my God, if I have to get end up to be like that, and you do, you know. But it was almost frightening. Because the unexpected is easier to take. But when you get in there and you know ahead of time what you're gonna do, but I went in about 8 o'clock.
And what were you doing when you went into labor? What were you doing when you went into labor?
I just helped the doctor. What do you mean?
What were you doing at home or wherever
at home. I mean, I started in the morning thinking that I felt a little different. It was really gradual. And now Bill was working now, but was a salesman and he was out. And we had planned that he'd be home. See, other times he'd come home anytime he felt like it. But during that time, he'd be home every day at 5 o'clock. And I was to leave a message if something happened. And, well, I had to be taken to the hospital by then, because I could tell I wasn't having labor pains at home, but I could tell. And then around 5 o'clock I started, but he hadn't come home yet. So my nephew took me, who had just become a father, he took me to the hospital and had to leave a message for Bill that I was in the hospital. So when he came home, and at that time, Paul, though, like now, you know, you right in, you share with the birth, you help them along. At that time, you were completely separate. The husband could not even take a peek in the room, nothing. He had to sit out in the hall on a chair or bench or whatever it is and wait for the doctor to come out and tell him what it was, and he could take part in nothing. You could never see him. I was all with all these screaming women, you know. And so then Bill was born about three something in the morning.
On what date?
On September the 6th, 1946. And
do you remember looking at him for the first time?
Oh God, he was so cute. It was such a joy. I mean, being a mother is a real beautiful experience, Paul. Oh. It's really something. And for Bill too, and having a boy, We really thrilled to that for so very long, and I still do. But Bill was a rascal when he was a teenager. But I'm so glad he was, because people who haven't been that rascal aren't as loving now as, I mean, so I'm glad the whole experience happened.
Well, Elder, we're just about out of time for the second hour of
tape. Isn't that something? No kidding.
Let me just sign off here, and we're going to be going to dinner soon anyway. So this is Paul Segrist signing off with Elder Willits on May 1st, 1999, the second hour of tape that we have done of the re-interview of Elder, and maybe someday we'll get to do a third hour. Oh. Who knows? So anyway, Elder, thank you very much.
Oh, you're well. Oh, God, is this a whole hour already?